beans, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Tenet, Mulan, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, The Boys Season 2, and a look back at the original Mulan animated film. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a spotlight on Frozen. Not the Disney musical, but the horror movie by Adam Green. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
There's actually a lot of news I want to get through. The first thing is, I mean, what else can I say that hasn't been said over the last week about Chadwick Boseman? A shock to anyone who didn't follow this closely, passed away of colon cancer last weekend. I didn't even know he was sick. And when somebody dies, you always want to look back at their career, and it was a short career, but it was an impactful career, and he was really doing some great things, and it is so sad to see that happen to somebody who was so young. He was in his early 40s. I mean, he was younger than me, and that always makes anyone kind of stand back and go, oh my God. I mean, what? And he was on his way to do some great stuff, not just as a superhero Black Panther, but in other films as well. And I think the thing that's so impactful is the cultural impact he had with Black Panther, and you know, how much that movie meant to, well, everybody who loves Marvel movies, but in particular the Black community in America. It was a movie that was so heavily ingrained into the culture that it really stood out. And people are wondering what they're going to do. I think it's a little early to start trying to plan the next Black Panther movie. I do want to see him rest in peace. And he was such a significant force and had kind of crept up and appeared out of almost nowhere. But he was such a good actor and had such a good heart. So he will absolutely be missed. Moving on to more news that's a little bit more developing and happening throughout the week. The New Mutants and Bill and Ted box office came in last week, and I've not yet seen the numbers for Bill and Ted in on-demand usage, and we may not see that for a couple weeks because they don't report that like regular box office numbers, but it's interesting that the New Mutants did about $7 million over the weekend, and people were saying $8 to $10 million. That's okay for it being that sort of that first movie out of the gate that was sort of had a high profile that wasn't known for the pandemic, but also Bill and Ted only did $1 million, but who knows what their at-home box office is. We're still seeing Hollywood figuring out how they're going to release their movies, whether they're going to do online, in theaters exclusive, or an amalgam of both, and that has yet to be seen. Also, what's interesting, I saw a note that the highest grosses came from drive-in theaters as well, which meant that the brick-and-mortar inside the theater cinemas, they still might have a little bit of catch-up time. We're going to see if that happens this week, because we got to look and see what happens with Tenet's box office, because it's exclusively in theaters. And all eyes are on this weekend and the last two weekends, because Hollywood has sort of taken a breather from its releases through September. I mean, there's a couple quote-unquote big wide releases, but nothing huge. We don't have a tentpole or a big release until Wonder Woman is due out October 2nd. But if we find out that there's been spreading events, or if the Tenet box office is not nearly what they hope at Warner Brothers, they might delay Wonder Woman, because we have this right now. Tenet has a whole like 4 weeks to make its money before they start putting other movies in theaters. I mean, I looked at the Tenet schedule this week, and it's like playing in 6 or 7 different actual theaters in the multiplex near me. So if that doesn't do particularly well, we might see some shifting again. Similarly, if Mulan does really well, and I'm talking like hundreds of millions on that Disney buy-in, that premium buy-in at $30, do not be surprised if suddenly Black Widow pivots onto the Disney Plus service as well. The final piece of news that is really interesting to talk about is the fact that Robert Pattinson has tested positive for coronavirus, and that shuts down the production of The Batman. Additionally, Dwayne Johnson made an announcement through Instagram that his whole family, his wife and his kids, all got hit with the coronavirus, and they apparently spent 3 weeks sick, but they've recovered now, so they're all healthy and safe. But this shows you that the stuff still spreads, and the Johnsons got it from like a family event, but Pattinson, we don't know where Pattinson got it from, but it certainly puts his entire production at risk, and they've got to deal with this, and this stuff's not covered by insurance now. So it's millions and millions and millions of dollars it's costing Warner Brothers to have to shut this thing down. So it may not be as safe as they thought to start productions up again. So there's going to be development. And I mean, we've got stuff from schools, and we've got stuff from movie theaters opening, and we got sports happening. We're not out of the woods yet, guys, and things might change and shift. You know, just because everything's open right now does not mean that everything's going to be open in a month. If the money doesn't come into the studios that they need, they may dial back on some of this. It's yet to be seen. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is the new trailer for the James Bond film No Time to Die, which is allegedly coming to theaters on November 20th.
James, fate draws us back together. Now your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Safin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, it'll be the death of you.
You can imagine why I've come back to play.
I gotta say, this trailer sold me. This looks great. This looks absolutely fantastic. It looks like good old-fashioned, old-school Bond, where he's trying to stop a maniac from destroying the world. The thing that does give me reservations is they're trying to develop characters a little too much. You cannot develop Bond. You cannot, because then you lose the whole series. Then he's gotta be somewhat disconnected emotionally. You can't have him be a tender, lovable, understanding Bond. He's gotta be a guy who shoots and kills people in cold blood. That's part of the character. I mean, for history, for 50 some years. I mean, I'm still a little bit nervous about what's happening with the behind the scenes and the stories of Bond. I can forgive this right now because they're going to change James Bond in the next movie. I do not think Daniel Craig's going to do another one. And I think that's great. Move on. Give Idris Elba his shot. I'd love to see him be James Bond. The next one I want to hit really quickly is The Comey Rule, which is on Showtime. It starts on September 27th.
No one has ever succeeded like I have.
This was not espionage. This was an attack.
You're gonna get clobbered, Jim.
Really looking forward to working with you. Let's take a picture.
We've now been presented the dossier concerning Russia and its connection to Trump.
Constitutes a real threat to national security.
Sir, I need loyalty. I expect loyalty.
This is a two-part miniseries, I believe, and it's, of course, based on James Comey's book and his interactions with President Trump. I'm actually kind of surprised that this is the first really big high profile movie about this presidency. And I would have expected a lot more. I'm not talking about documentaries. I mean, Dinesh D'Souza and Michael Moore have done their things. I'm talking about a narrative feature. And this is the first one. And it's not even that. It's a TV series. So I don't know about Jeff Daniels as Comey, but Brendan Gleeson looks like he's doing a fantastic job not making a caricature of the president, but trying to portray certain things, at least in the trailer, as realistic. So we'll see. And like I said, it's based on Comey's book, and you know, it doesn't matter where you fall politically, you're going to have your own opinion of this. But this looks like an interesting take. I've not read Comey's book. Who knows? But like anything, it's not going to come to any sort of conclusion or change anybody's mind. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Tenet and the original 1998 animated film Mulan. guys at the movies with Kevin Carr. The first film I want to talk about is Tenet. Christopher Nolan's time-bending thriller follows a secret agent hoping to thwart the end of the world.
To do what I do, I need some idea of the threat we face.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
Nuclear holocaust?
No. Something worse.
You have to start looking at the world in a new way.
With a description like that, it sounds like Christopher Nolan's trying to get a job doing a Bond movie. I mean, seriously, this feels like the typical Bond villain of trying to stop World War III. Nah, I guess that's okay. I once got in an argument with somebody who thought Christopher Nolan should do the next Bond movie, and I'm like, absolutely not. No, because every movie Christopher Nolan does is about Christopher Nolan. His ego is all over these movies. His ego is like having Quentin Tarantino and Michael Bay have a child and then create somebody who's going to put their ego all over a movie. And I mean, some people do that in an interesting way. Like Wes Anderson does that too, for that matter. All of his stuff is very Wes Anderson. His take on everything, his style is all over it. Now, Christopher Nolan has run into some issues with this because he refused to let it go to video on demand, and we're going to see how well this one does. I was hoping for a screening early because I'm like, gosh, you know, if Warner Brothers really wants to promote this, they should try and screen this to everybody. But then they backed off on their screenings, which I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then they did an early access earlier this week that you could go see it in theaters. Now, I wasn't going to do that because I'm just personally not comfortable going to theaters right now. It's untested. Talk to me at the end of the month. And if at the end of the month we don't have any spreader events or things that can be linked back or traced back to people going to a movie theater, I might start going to it in October or November. But right now, it's still a lot of unknowns and a lot of things you can't control. It's going to take a big movie for me to go see it in theaters, and that's just my own personal situation. That's for my own health and my family's health, and I've got people in my life that are very high risk, and I don't want to be the vector that brings something to them. I've gone to like maybe a couple restaurants, and that's it. And even then, they're restaurants when I really have taken a look at how they set things up and socially distant and serve the patrons, that I know that they're really trying to keep things safe. But a lot of critics, some critics I know actually went, and you can rent an entire theater for a very reasonable price now because they're half full, if that. I mean, some of them are only 20% full. And I know people that for like $100 or $150 were able to rent a theater and just get a private showing of Tenet. I'm not willing to do that. I'm not going to blow $150 just so I can see this movie. And I certainly wouldn't blow the money to watch it in IMAX, which is kind of how, if I'm going to go to the theater, you might as well see it in IMAX. But I'm still nervous about it. I still don't know if I really want to go. Now, the buzz I'm hearing is that it's fantastic. It's all Christopher Nolan's greatness. But there's some little interesting things that I'm hearing between those lines. Like the fact that you can't hear half the dialogue. You remember how in Interstellar you'd have this big booming soundtrack and it would drown out what people were saying? And people complained about it, and Christopher Nolan sat there in his ivory tower was like, oh, well, it's because I treat dialogue like it's another sound effect. It's really a, shut up, you stupid idiot! If the words aren't important, don't put them in the doggone movie! Unless you're really doing some sort of effect. You know, like there's the famous scene in The Godfather where Michael Corleone it's before the whole gun in the toilet scene, and this guy's talking to him in Italian and they don't translate it. But those words aren't important to what's going on in the scene because he's not even focused on the words. And that makes sense. Nolan just is like, I like big noises. I like sound. And at that point, what the heck's the point of a movie? Give me something at home where I can put on subtitles and actually hear what your stupid characters are saying. Because I'm understanding from some of the things I'm hearing is that you can't even understand key points of dialogue in this film, which begs the question, as important as it is to see in the theaters, why would you go to the theaters to see it if you can't understand the story? And I've heard people say, you know, so many people apologizing for Christopher Nolan, even if they don't like this movie. They're like, oh, well, it was hard to hear and it's real mind-bending and, you know, I gotta go see it 3 or 4 times. Screw you. You should be able to watch the movie once and get it. Now, you can appreciate a movie on multiple watchings, and you can dissect it further, and you can get more nuance and layers to it, but you should not have to go to a movie more than once to understand the basic point of it. Now, that's going to come back around when I talk about I'm thinking of ending things in the next segment. But in this movie, I'm like, I don't even want to go see it in the theater because I want to be able to understand it. And I don't want, you know, COVID Connie 2 rows back from me coughing on me while I'm trying to watch the movie. So I didn't see it. I'm not going to see it until it comes on home video. And I really don't think I'm going to lose anything from my cinematic snobbiness. So I was not afforded an opportunity to see it. So I'm going to have to say, I got to give it a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Mulan, the original movie. This 1998 animated Disney film follows the legend of Fa Mulan, a girl who pretends to be a boy in order to serve in the Emperor's army in place of her father.
I've heard a great deal about you, Mulan. You took your father's armor. Ran away from home. Impersonated a soldier. Endangered the lives of thousands of men. But soon the world will know the great things you have done.
I realized when I watched the remake, I said, I haven't seen Mulan in years. And I think I've only seen it once before that. I saw Mulan when they first released it on DVD sometime in the early 2000s. And you know what? I got to say, it's an interesting placement in the Disney canon because it's after the big surge that they had with Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, which was this wave of amazement. And then they did stuff like Pocahontas and the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And so the stuff started to kind of go downhill and be less beloved. Unless, at the time, instant classics. So Mulan, I thought, was a really well-done animated film, but it also was like one of the last ones that had certain elements to it. For example, they ended up not doing musicals shortly after this. I liked the story. I think it was a good story, and it has some brilliant animation, but it does have certain things in there that are very Disney-oriented. For example, the songs, they have music in the songs. And there's one song in there about making a man out of you because it's a Victor Victoria in feudal China. It's almost the same song as 7 days, 7 nights, I'm going to make you a man from Rocky Horror Picture Show. It has a whole bunch of different subtext to it, but it's weirdly similar. And they have the cute characters, of course, Mushu, the dragons, played by Eddie Murphy. And they have this little cricket that follows her along. And they also have the ancestors that she speaks to, which are these sort of rogue gallery of Disney players in the background. So it's a very Disney movie. And I mean, I liked it. I thought it was, in fact, I think I liked it better watching it now than when I first saw it like 15 years ago. So I liked Mulan. I think it was good, but it's still not my favorite Disney movie. So I'm still going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mulan from 2020, and I'm thinking of ending things. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's go from the animated film from Mulan in 1998 to Mulan 22 years later. In feudal China, a young woman joins the emperor's army in place of her injured father.
Citizens, we are under attack from northern invaders.
Their leader calls himself Bori Khan.
Fights alongside a witch.
No survivors.
By edict of his imperial majesty, every family must contribute one man to fight.
Have you no son?
I am blessed with 2 daughters. I will fight.
It is my duty to protect my family.
Now, I sort of truncated my discussion of the animated Mulan, not just for time, but because some of it's going to spill over into this review. The first thing I'm addressing is the difference between the two movies. all the stuff that you would expect from the Disney movie. Quintessential Disney, especially 1990s Disney. You don't really have that in this. They don't have songs and musical numbers. You also don't have the cute factor. Not just the characters of Mushu, the dragon, and Cricket, which is a real cricket. They make those into other warriors that are just human beings. They're actual people that you talk. They're just characters, but they're not cute, adorable little Disney animated things. And I always wondered how they're going to do the dragon, because I was like, you cannot just have Eddie Murphy show up and do this goofy CGI animated dragon and take this movie seriously. And they don't do that. And to the point that if you really didn't realize that that's what they were doing, that they were morphing them into just some of the soldiers that she gets to know, because they already had several soldiers that were sort of her sidekicks in the original movie. You think that they got rid of them completely. You also don't have the ancestors that she talks to, because they're all kind of goofy, silly, that rogue gallery. So all that stuff that makes the Disney movie cute isn't there, because instead of just reshooting the animated film, which is kind of what they did with Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, even though they changed some stuff, and Lion King for that matter, they said, okay, this is a cute little kids movie. Let's make a bona fide Hong Kong action movie. This looks like the kind of movie that you would have seen come out with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or Hero with Jet Li. And it works. Now, granted, if you got a little girl who's five who loves Mulan and has watched the original movie a billion times, you're going to need to prepare her for that when you watch the live action Mulan, because that's not it. This is a little more violent because it's real people with swords and arrows and stuff. I mean, it's not horribly violent. It's not a cartoon. It's an action movie. It's a war film. And it, first of all, it's beautifully shot. And as I'm watching it, I was talking to my wife because she was watching it with me. And I said, oh, I totally see why Disney wanted this out there during the year. They wanted to release this because they're hoping for some Academy Award nominations, if for nothing else, but cinematography and costume design and the visuals of this movie are quite impressive. And yeah, they've got CGI stuff, but that's not the stuff. It's not the impressive CGI, although I'm sure they use a lot of it to enhance things and to build things. But just the backdrop, the locations on this are gorgeous and beautiful and worth watching in HD. And then, of course, you've got the action scenes, which are incredibly well constructed. And you still have this true character of Mulan trying to build her into a real fleshed out character, which they do a really good job with. And because you don't have all the distractions of the ancestors and the cricket and Mushu the dragon, you can focus on her developing as a character, because that's one thing that was kind of missing. There wasn't a whole lot of development of Mulan in the original animated film. You get a lot more of it here, because she doesn't have all the cute elements to kind of prop her up. She really has to stand on her own. And they do in this. And it's a brilliantly made film. I gotta say, I was impressed. And I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, I hope this is what the movie is. And that's what it becomes. And this is where they need to update these animated films. I think they've done some that haven't been very good. I thought Dumbo was sort of a missed opportunity, because they changed so much that they couldn't even make the thing work with the little elephant as the main character. And in this one, they had to change it for the live action framework, but they did exactly what they needed to do. I feel like I'm watching an epic Chinese movie from the late 90s or early 2000s. So I'm going to have to say Mulan totally rocks. Absolutely loved it.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is I'm Thinking of Ending Things. During a visit to her boyfriend's parents, a woman contemplates ending the relationship while experiencing the visit out of time.
I'm visiting Jake's parents for the first time. He hasn't been my boyfriend for very long.
They really are looking forward to meeting you.
I think of ending things.
Hello? We're here.
Here they come.
Jake has told us so much about you.
He's told me so much about both of you, too.
And you came anyway?
But there's just something profoundly wrong here.
Are you okay?
You don't have to go.
I don't have to go where?
Forward.
This is on Netflix. Of course, Mulan just to point out is on Disney Plus, you got to pay $30 in addition to your Disney Plus subscription. Now, they're going to put Mulan probably on the Disney service sometime this winter. I've heard reports that it's going to be in December, but that's like any sort of video release. You know, you get a 3 to 4 month exclusivity. But for this, I'm thinking of ending things. This is on Netflix. You know, Netflix does the one and done, and that's their release. And that is now available. You can watch it now if you've got a Netflix subscription. It's directed and written by Charlie Kaufman. If you don't know who he is, he's done a lot of movies. And I've said this about Charlie Kaufman. He doesn't just think outside of the box. He thinks so far outside of the box, you're going to look around and you're not going to see the box. He's done movies like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Being John Malkovich, an adaptation. Now, all those were directed by somebody else. But then he's gone and directed his own movies. He most recently directed Anomalisa, which was an animated film, sort of a stop-motion animated film from a couple years ago. And then he did the movie Synecdoche, New York with Philip Seymour Hoffman. And that one was bizarre and different. And a lot of these are very hard to wrap your brain around. And, you know, I just said about Tenet that you should be able to go watch a movie once and get the whole movie and understand it and not have to watch it again. Well, I'm going to go back on that. I didn't completely understand I'm Thinking of Ending Things. But there's a charm to it. It's almost like Christopher Nolan deliberately obfuscates things just to be cute and coy. Like booming soundtrack to cover the dialogue and be like, oh, you missed it. Oh, you didn't pay attention enough. It's just a dream. Or was it? Which is the stupid Twilight Zone ending of Inception. I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Charlie Kaufman just made a movie the way Charlie Kaufman makes a movie. He likes how he did it. And if you don't understand it, tough beans. And that I can appreciate. It's sort of like The Lighthouse last year. I love that movie. It makes no sense, but you really have to think. And it's thought provoking. And that's what this movie does. Now, one of the things this movie also doesn't do is move fast. It's about 2.5 hours and it's a long film. And like the first like half hour of it, or more, is them in the car talking. And it's not inane dialogue. It's actually really interesting dialogue, but it's very heady. And it starts to go into the out of time, the sequential things, the sometimes self-aware dialogue. It creeps in there at the beginning, but by the time they get about an hour in, it's kind of turning in over itself. And then when, of course, they get to the house and they're meeting the parents, you know, she's, you know, going up and down the stairs and they're different ages and she's just accepting this. So there's something strange going on. And this is more or less an out of time, out of sequence look at somebody's life, which I kind of found absolutely interesting. So I love Charlie Kaufman's work, even if I don't particularly like the movies themselves, because they're so unique and different, and you can watch them multiple times, and they're something unlike anything you've ever seen before. And while it does run a little bit long, and the dialogue does get tiresome, and the amount of time talking in cars and referencing David Foster Wallace's works gets a little bit cliche, it's still worth it to stick through. And I don't know if watching this movie more than once is going to make it make any more sense. So it might just be that it doesn't make sense. And that's the point. So I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Boys Season 2 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Frozen. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews without a movie review. This is actually a television series. It's on Amazon. And I believe they've released all the episodes and they've got The Boys Season 1 already available. If you haven't watched it, it's there. You can check it out. But in the second season, as the corporate-funded superheroes struggle to keep their fracturing alliance afloat, a group of revenge seekers continue to try to take them down.
We got soup terrorists. And we got no superheroes.
Hi! I'm Stormfront.
Who?
I'm the new girl.
Wonderful.
Oh, good! Cause I'm
so what's your big plan?
We'll take them, but... There we go. And I get my wife back.
We're in. Of course we're in.
We blow it up in the air.
The general gist of this TV series is, what if superheroes were real and they were just normal human beings with the flaws that we have, and then given the celebrity status and the power and the attention, they all kind of turn into a-holes. That's basically the setup. It's celebrity superheroes. And unfortunately, you don't get any Keanu Reeves in this. They're all jerks. or they're so new to the program that they haven't become jerks yet. And there's this group of guys called The Boys, which is a terrible name for it, but that's who they are. They're The Boys. And they're trying to take down the superhero because everybody has different revenge ideas on different superheroes. And in this season, it's following up on stuff that had happened in season one. So if you haven't seen season one, you're going to go on and check that out. I think it's about 8 or 10 episodes. It's worth the time. It's a little, both these seasons, it's heavy to watch too many all at once. It's at times a very nihilistic show, and it can be very depressing. So it can mess with your mental health if you try to pound through 8 episodes of this. And also, sad to say, you know, a friend of mine who originally recommended this, because there was nudity, gratuitous graphic nudity in the first season. Sorry to say it, Steve, but you don't get the graphic nudity in this one. Oh, well. You're going to have to just go on violence and nihilism. But anyways, I actually like this season better than the first one because they're delving into the corruption of the individuals. They're delving into what makes people truly good or truly bad. And it's no longer there for shock value. You actually develop some of the characters and you develop the bad guys who are the good guys even better. You know, you know that the guy who plays the version of Superman is really a horrible person who's manipulating the media, but he's also trying to keep control of his own factions. So, you know, not only is his skullduggery not exposed, but just that he stays in power. Even though he has all these powers, it doesn't guarantee the celebrity power. And that's, I think, the thing that works is it shows the danger of celebrity worship. And it shows when somebody is given this power and go unchecked, how bad it can be and how there really do need to be checks and balances in the world so that not one person or group or corporation or faction or anything can really take things over. So I think there's a lot this season has to say. And like I said, I think the season is in a lot of ways better than the first one, and it's also fun to watch Jake Quaid end up covered in blood in almost every single episode. I guess that was in his contract. But anyways, the Boys season 2 is interesting, but like I said, it can be a little bit punishing to watch all of it all at once. But I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. First of all, before I talk about the movie I want to announce that partly because of the pandemic, and we lost a good chunk of the summer in terms of some of the things I get to do, and we're heading into my favorite time of year because we have that October, November, December frame where I love Halloween, and then I love Thanksgiving, and then I love Christmas season, and I'm getting ready to enjoy this. And I realize that a good chunk of this might be spent at home still, and that's good, and that's safe, and that's what the responsible person should do. And I will be wearing my masks, but of course I might get some Halloween masks because we're heading into horror movie season, people. And I have declared that Labor Day is the beginning of horror movie season. I'm actually starting early to that. I want to start watching horror movies. I like watching scary movies, and I try to watch one a day at least. Now, one of the things you got to do is be careful because you can go down rabbit holes with this stuff. Earlier this week, I was watching a bunch of stuff on Tubi TV. I talked about that at the beginning of the pandemic and saying, this is a great resource because they have obscure stuff and different things that you're not used to seeing. If you know, obviously you want to have Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, but Tubi TV is free. And they have a lot of stuff that doesn't show up elsewhere. Like I watched The Crazies, the original George Romero, The Crazies, the other night. And that was great to watch. And I think that was the only place I was able to find it to watch for a reasonable price, which was free. And there's a couple ads here and there, but you can deal with that. And then it goes down this rabbit hole where it takes me to Chud, Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers. And of course, I had to watch that because that's a terrible 80s cheesy horror movie that I think is awful. But I just, I love that sort of the 80s and 70s and even early 90s cheese. And I was going down a rabbit hole and I watched earlier Stir of Echoes on there, the Kevin Bacon movie. And what I did is I went and I favorited the movies that I hadn't seen yet. And I said, well, these are horror movies that I want to catch up on. And by the way, if you have suggestions for horror movies, in fact, a listener suggested I watch The Crazies, which was good. And I'm going to watch the remake of The Crazies later this month, which I remember enjoying back 10 years ago. If you have any suggestions of horror movies that you think I should watch, not the ones that you've made, I get it. Everyone's going to want to promote that. But if there's a movie you're like, hey, have you seen this? Now, if I've already seen it, I'm sorry, I probably won't watch it again if I don't really want to. So I'll be like, oh, that's a great suggestion. I've already seen it. Or if it's a movie that, like, I'm not a big fan of just overdoing zombie movies. I also don't watch too many movies with subtitles because a lot of times I'm in the middle of doing other things or I maybe have to multitask or send emails. It's sometimes hard to concentrate. I know I sound like a Luddite when I say, oh, I don't want to read a movie, but that sometimes does get in the way. But if you have suggestions, please send them my way. You can send them to Kevin at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to Twitter at twitter.com/Kevin Carr. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and leave it as a comment on this page, or you can go to facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies and offer me suggestions. I'll take any and all. I just may not watch everything because I only have 2 months and I got to cram all these horror movies into it. But the movie I wanted to see that I hadn't seen yet was Adam Green's Frozen, which has nothing to do with Elsa and singing. In this film, 320-somethings find themselves trapped on a ski lift when everything on the slopes are turned off for the night.
No one knows that we're up here.
This is so messed up.
Help!
Hey!
It's Sunday, and they're not open again till Friday!
If we're up here all week, we're gonna die.
Oh my God!
This reminds me a little bit of the movie Open Water. If you remember that film, it's about these divers who, because they did something wrong with the head count and the baggage count, that they were left in the water with sharks. And that's actually based on a true story. The ski lift idea is pretty interesting because it's about them just trapped on this lift. And of course, they've shut it down, not just for the night, but for the week because it's a weekend gig. And so, it's like Sunday night and they're not going to be back there till Friday. So they're like, we may be stuck up here for days, and it's cold and it's freezing and there's wolves down on the ground. And it's one of those, what would you do? It kind of reminds me a little bit of that movie Centigrade that I reviewed. I believe it was last week, about the people trapped in a car. And this wasn't the one location deal because of course they have the lead up. They show them on the slopes and getting on the ski lift. And of course there's a little bit more of other things happening in the movie, but this is exceptionally well done. Now, it's directed by Adam Green, who did the Hatchet movies, and I think the Hatchet movies are fine. I like a good slasher movie as much as anyone, and I do know that they're paying homage to, the Jason and Freddy and Michael Myers movies. But I actually think Frozen's a better movie that he put together because it does put you in that situation of what would you do? Would you jump? Would you try to climb? How would you get off the ski lift? And then how would you deal with the wolves that are down there ready to eat your face off? So it's an intense movie and it is a little bit grisly. So it's a great one to watch. Now, I think it's no longer on Tubi TV because I think it was an August release, but you may be able to find it somewhere else. But Frozen kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available this week are the films Irresistible and Rogue, plus 4K versions of Beetlejuice, The Goonies, and both Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movies. Plus, with Death on the Nile allegedly coming out in October, there's special editions of Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile, Evil Under the Sun, and The Mirror Cracked. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Rent-A-Pal and Woke. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.